You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
On Wednesday, it was World Eating Disorder Awareness Day. Yesterday, Rebecca Toms, a mother of a recovered eating disorder sufferer, presented a petition on the steps of Parliament urging the government to provide urgent expert care and subsidy assistance for young people with eating disorders. A dietitian spoke out this week and says there is currently more harm being done than good in New Zealand's healthcare system to treat people with eating disorders. The Eating Disorder Association have said that their voluntary team of six people provide the only education doctors and medical students receive. There is not much data either, so we actually have no idea how many people are suffering with eating disorders. And the sobering fact is, eating disorders have the highest mortality rate of any mental disorder. New Zealand needs to step up and take note of how other countries are dealing with this issue and how we can treat people with eating disorders. Christy Amato is someone that is stepping up, and she's a Kiwi who has been running a recovered living program over in the US after seeking treatment there herself. Now recovered, she is trying to start a New Zealand's first not-for-profit residential centre for people with eating disorders, modelled off what she experienced in the US. So a warning that this following interview is related to eating disorders and covers topics such as rehabilitation for disordered eating, lived experiences of someone with an eating disorder, and the consequences of disordered eating. If this interview isn't for you, sweet as, feel free to tune out and come back to us in about 10 minutes. I started off by asking Christy what the treatment here in New Zealand looks like compared to what she experienced in the US.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference for me is in New Zealand, the treatment here was about getting me medically stable and getting me to a place where I could function, which was absolutely important, and it saved my life at the time. I think the piece that was missing for me when I was getting treatment in New Zealand was the how to get from functioning to getting to recovered. And so what I experienced in New Zealand is the residential treatment centre there was set up like a home. It wasn't a hospital. And so the daily routine really mimicked as closely as possible real life. And so for me, my eating disorder affected every facet of my life, from my behaviours to my thoughts to my daily routine. So something as simple as the brand of bread that I felt okay to buy, rules that I had about exercise and food, these are all pieces that were keeping my eating disorder functioning at a level that I couldn't get consistent treatment for in New Zealand. But in America, I was able to really work through those pieces and learn how to live without an eating disorder, and that was key for me.
Why do you think in New Zealand we don't have this sort of recovered mindset around eating disorders?
It's a really interesting question. And to be fair, I think in America there's still areas in Central America and the East Coast that don't believe in being fully recovered, because there's the addiction model where someone who's been an alcoholic or has used substances will say perpetually, I'm in recovery. And I think what I learned, or the philosophy that I've adopted from America, is that when someone struggles with substance abuse, they need to abstain. And that's how they get through. Whereas for someone with an eating disorder, I had to learn to make peace with food. I had to face my demon six times a day, you know, three meals and three snacks. And so it's not like taking a tiger for a walk anymore. There just literally is no tiger. And so that's why I feel recovered, because I don't have those triggers anymore. And, you know, not everybody has that philosophy. And so part of it, I do believe, is about what people want to adopt, what works for them. But for me, it gave me my life back.
Mm. Is it just because we are behind on some of the science, or we haven't seen it work like that in New Zealand? Like, why don't we have that sort of mindset that we can get to that place?
It's such a good question, and I don't think I have that answer. Mm. I do see, like, that we had a lot of international clients in America, and perhaps because that is where that philosophy was born, it is quite a big distance from New Zealand. You know, if someone's traveling over for treatment, and treatment in America is not cheap. It comes at $1,200 US a day. And that's something that's out of reach of the majority of New Zealanders and Australians. So I almost do wonder if, because it's so difficult for us to get over there to access that treatment, it's only coming back in trickles. And what I'd like to see is that it comes back in flood. We have that philosophy everywhere, and saying to people, being fully recovered
it's absolutely possible, and it's possible for everybody.
So this week on Wednesday was World Eating Disorder Day, and nutritionist Victoria Schoenwald came out this week and said that there is more harm than good being done in the New Zealand healthcare system to treat people with eating disorders. What do you think about that comment?
Yeah, you know, I think the harm that I see comes from not having enough resources to treat people. So clients are being told they're not sick enough to meet criteria to get help, and that's the harm, because in order to get treatment, they first need to become more unwell. So I've got a client at the moment, she's been on a wait list on the public health system for 12 months and isn't considered, you know, quote-unquote, sick enough to get to meet criteria to get treatment. And I think that's where I see the harm being done, is because she first has to get more unwell in order to get the help that she needs.
Wow. So hopefully you're going to be starting that flood of that new mindset coming around eating disorders here in New Zealand. Congratulations on securing a premises.
Thank you.
Can you please give me the lowdown on how your non-profit residential centre will operate?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are going to be a 6-bed residential and have an attached 6-place day and partial program that runs 7 days a week. And it is a home, it's not a hospital. And so we'll have what's called a multidisciplinary team. And so with anyone that has an eating disorder, you're looking at a team of a medical doctor, a psychiatrist, a registered dietitian, psychologist, therapist. So it's a full 24/7 wraparound team. And so we're really mimicking daily life, both around food, but also around something like, for example, going to the grocery store. When I had an eating disorder, I'd park, you know, a couple of blocks away and walk there, because my mind was all about, well, if I'm going to buy food, then I need to burn calories. And there was this whole dialogue that was going on behind the scenes. And so it's about really normalizing routines, going to the grocery store, parking in a normal place in the car park, you know, going in, not looking at the calorie information on the food packets, like all of those pieces. And we also have a full program. So it starts at 7 o'clock in the morning and it finishes at 10 o'clock at night. So there's not a lot of time sitting around. We have groups, we have restaurant outings, things like that. Everything we can do to help people experience life without an eating disorder, so that when they get back into their own life, they've already had these experiences that they can lean on.
Unfortunately, with how our system works, is there often needs to be groundbreaking people like this to get stuff off the ground, prove that something like this works, to therefore sort of pave the way for funding. If this works, do you think that will kind of help a systemic shift in the treatment of eating disorders in New Zealand?
I think it's a great question. I mean, my 50-100-year vision is that over time, this can become the standardized way of treatment like it is in America. I mean, that would be my greatest vision. And the truth is, with eating disorders, no one has yet found a treatment model that works for 100% of people 100% of the time. And so I'm not under any illusions that this is going to be a magic pill, but I do know that this is something that's worked for me, it's worked for hundreds of other people, and it's something we don't currently have. So if this is another piece of the puzzle that can help reach those people that don't currently have treatment, it's going to make a difference.
And in order to start that, you're trying to raise $1.2 million to have your facility open next year. How are you going with this goal?
We have had so much support from the general public. It's been overwhelming. I've been getting calls and emails every single week, both from people who are wanting to offer their support in various ways, whether it's donating fresh food, whether it's donating time. I'm also getting calls and emails from people who are already wanting to be put on the wait list. So if there's any businesses out there that want to support us in reaching our goal, this is going to save lives.
Putting the call out there, listeners. If we notice a friend with unusual eating habits or even just struggling mentally and emotionally, keeping eating disorders in mind, how could we talk to them about food? What's some useful things that we could say or do?
Yeah, I think the biggest issue I see is that people are scared to speak because they don't want to make it worse. And so you get what I like to call the eggshell syndrome, where people sort of tiptoe around it and they actually become enablers. It becomes okay that person doesn't come to lunch, or it becomes okay that person disappears, you know, after the meal, whether it's to go to the bathroom or to go and exercise, and it actually becomes an enabling behaviour. And so what I'd recommend is for anyone that's concerned about a friend or family member is to get support themselves, to go and talk about how can they have those conversations. And it might be the case that your friend or your person is defensive, but I think the fact that just being able to open those conversations, because I like to say sometimes that eating disorders are communication disorders. People are communicating through their food or through their bodies that they're not okay because they're not able to say the words. They don't have that ability in that moment for whatever reason. So even just opening up that conversation, it gives someone a different avenue to be able to reach out.
And just lastly, are there any quick myths that you would like to bust, or facts that you would like our listeners to be aware of about eating disorders?
So many myths. You know, I think a great one that the depression movement put out there is that you can't tell by looking who has depression. Absolutely the same for eating disorders. You cannot tell just by looking who has an eating disorder. My youngest client is 8. My oldest client is 72. Mm. I have parents, I have grandparents, I have, you know, professionals that have eating disorders. And I think the media really glorifies a certain type of body is seen as having an eating disorder. That's just not the truth. The majority of people with an eating disorder will not have that stigmatized body that the media puts out there.
That was Christy Amadio, founder of Recovered Living, the first not-for-profit residential service for disordered eating in New Zealand.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.